We've got existing laws. This is all politics again, not solving a problem.
Alaska's congressional delegation gets ready to vote on federal financial reform. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, the 23rd of April. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a German shepherd who rose to the occasion when his family was in trouble.
Buddy is an untrained dog who for some reason recognized the severity of the situation and acted valiantly in getting help for his family.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. And by Northrim Bank, reminding you that you have a second chance to help other Alaskans. If you filed for your PFD online, you can safely donate a portion of your dividend to your favorite Alaska cause. Log into the PFD website and pick, click, give.
Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski is among the Republicans the White House is trying to work with and mollify over a pending financial regulatory bill. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner made the rounds on Capitol Hill this week to talk financial reform and stopped at Murkowski's office yesterday evening. Senate Democrats plan their first test of legislation Monday, which will force Republicans to vote on whether to move forward. At least one Republican will have to side with Democrats to stop a filibuster. Senator Murkowski says the main concern she brought up with Secretary Geithner is over community banks and credit unions and how they could be caught up in regulations designed for big Wall Street banks. She says small banks in Alaska could get unnecessarily squeezed.
What is coming at them in terms of the reporting requirements, the restrictions, the potential restrictions on credit, and really ensuring that the small banks who were in no way, shape, or form responsible for any of the meltdown, the crisis that we saw on Wall Street, that they don't end up being punished.
Murkowski says Geithner agreed that new regulation should not jeopardize the ability of smaller banks to offer credit. But Murkowski says the details over compliance concern her and could be deal breakers. Alaska's Democratic Senator Mark Begich agrees with his senior colleague across the aisle that community banks and credit unions shouldn't be stifled.
In Alaska, there are huge economic engines, and there's no reason that they should be overregulated because they did not cause this problem. But these mega banks, these banks that got into everything that you can imagine, they're the ones that crippled this economy and almost sunk this economy, and they're the ones that need to be held accountable.
Alaska Republican Congressman Don Young also sides with the senators that community banks need to be excluded from new regulations, and he is entirely against the work Democrats are doing in the Senate.
We've got existing laws. This is a political gesture by Obama and Harry Reid. This is all politics again, not solving a problem. I do think if FDIC, SEC, the regulatory commissions in place right now were to do their jobs and enforce it, and that's our fault because we didn't have the oversight that was necessary to bird dog it.
Unlike Young, Senator Begich supports the current financial reform efforts overall. He wants to see increased regulation in the banking industry over hedge funds, derivatives, and subprime loans, and more transparency.
I think just the whole disclosure of some of this. I mean, I think what people found last year was just kind of a shock about how much in the trillions, not in the billions, in the trillions of this financial activity that was going on literally behind closed doors and risking individual investor money and in depositors' money.
Monday's Senate vote will decide if floor debate can begin over a bill that would set up an agency to protect consumers against loan abuses and start a regulatory council to monitor the financial system for risks. It would also do away with the notion that a bank should get a bailout because it's too big to fail. An Easter Sunday tragedy was averted thanks to the actions of a very unusual hero. That's what Alaska State Troopers are calling Buddy the German Shepherd, whose quick action led to his master's rescue. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has the story.
An Alaska State Trooper's dash cam caught it all. The eerie video, taken in the dark, illuminated by the trooper's headlights, shows a scene right out of old Rin Tin Tin movies. The dog waits by the roadside, definitely trying to get the driver's attention. Trooper Terrence Shanigan says he was on duty on Easter when he got a call about a fire somewhere in the maze of unlit, helter-skelter Caswell Lakes roads. He says his GPS was on the fritz when he came to a three-way intersection and had no idea which way to turn when he spied a shadowy figure in the road.
And the position of Buddy was such, and the body direction and movement of the dog led me to want to take a left-hand turn. And it was just one of those nonverbal cues, being around dogs. I just felt like it wanted me to follow. So I started following down the road, and at first I was unsure if I was chasing. So I'd slow down, and then Buddy would look back. When he'd look back at me, it was like, come on, you're going too slow. And so I'd speed up, and he'd speed up. And we did this about three or four times. Until we got to the street that we turned on, I recognized the name of the street, and once I still couldn't see the fire. Once I got to the very end, Buddy stopped that chase motion and waited at the end of the driveway, allowing me to pull in. And once I pulled up to the house, you can see that there's an enormous flame going.
That's how Buddy led Trooper Shanigan to a burning shed and to his injured owner, 23-year-old Ben Heinrichs, who suffered flash burns to his face and a severely burned hand due to a fire which ignited when sparks met a gas can. Heinrichs says he knew he was in trouble and that the fire could spread to his family's home next to the shed.
I was out in the shed working on parts for my truck, and a spark hit some gas and ignited, and I caught on fire, and I had run out and closed the door behind me, and I stopped and dropped, rolled in the snow, and realized the door was closed, ran back in to get my dog and grab a gas can that was on fire so he could get out. And then as he ran to the house, I told him we need to get help, and he ran off.
Troopers say firefighters quickly responded to the call in the remote Caswell Lakes neighborhood in time to save the Heinrichs' family residence from the shed's flames. Today, Alaska State Trooper Colonel Audie Holloway joined with Trooper Shanigan and the Heinrichs family in presenting Buddy with a special award.
Buddy is an untrained dog who for some reason recognized the severity of the situation and acted valiantly in getting help for his family.
Buddy's honors include a stainless steel dinner dish and a giant chew toy. The German Shepherd faced a media frenzy as well, all with gentle calm as cameras flashed and microphones surrounded him. An offer from the Today Show has been made, and the trooper's video that started it all has gone viral. Who knows what's next? Buddy the movie, perhaps. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a high-end cruise ship company enters Alaska waters for the first time.
Their clientele are very well-to-do, spend a lot of money when they come off in port communities. They're smaller ships.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP, unlocking Alaska's energy potential, and by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com.
The name Michael Krause may not be immediately familiar to all Alaskans, but the map of Native people and languages he developed in the mid-70s probably is. Professor Krause is the founder of the Alaska Native Language Center at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He recently gave a talk about his work in an interesting setting, the Alaska Jewish Historical Museum and Cultural Center. Before he spoke, Rabbi Joseph Greenberg, the president of the museum, said while researching the history of Alaska Jews, he discovered that Krause and more than half of the other professors involved in the Alaska Native Language Center are Jewish. He said it symbolizes the struggles both Jews and Natives have had in trying to hold on to their cultural identity and worldview.
You see, the preservation of language and culture is a very noble value in our culture, in Jewish culture. language presents culture, and translations cannot capture the mood of the cultural implications of what is spoken or written. In Italian, there is a saying that translation is a polite lie. We often say that some meaning is lost with translation.
The rabbi said it takes a lot of chutzpah, or guts, to maintain language and culture in today's society. And that's where Dr. Michael Krauss comes in. Krauss has dedicated 50 years of his career to meticulously documenting the 20 distinct Alaska Native languages. Krauss came to Alaska in 1960. He says the reasons some languages not only survive but trample others was summed up by sociolinguist Joshua Fishman.
A language is a dialect with an army and a navy. Meaning, of course, that you have to have power and prestige, or your language would be considered nothing but a dialect and it should be slated for obliteration.
With that in mind, he worked hard to preserve native languages by defining them on the map so they would have the status to survive. Krauss blames the schools that used to ban native languages for the desperate condition they're in today. He says another culprit is television.
Or the media, but most particularly TV, which I have called a kind of cultural nerve gas, which has had been very effective in getting children to drop their own language and parents feeling helpless to turn it off themselves. So since the 70s, I would say that TV has finishing off, mopping up what was not already undone by the educational system.
Krauss says by the time the language map was developed in the 70s, only children on St. Lawrence Island and in the Kuskokwim Delta area around Bethel were still speaking Central Yupik as their first language. Of 200 villages, he says only about 12 in the Central Yupik area today can still make that claim. Krauss says when he arrived at UAF in 1960, it was considered a gentlemanly pursuit to study what were considered curios from a disappearing past. But he said to work to try to help languages survive was considered taboo. Then the civil rights movement inspired an underground effort at UAF, and Krauss helped start the Eskimo Language Workshop. In the early 70s, state legislation finally allowed native language to be taught in Alaska schools. At the same time, the UAF Native Language Center was developed, and Krauss said they had two missions.
Study Alaska Native languages, which I took to mean document Alaska Native languages, above all things, and to support the bilingual or language maintenance or even revitalization movements in the schools. And that's what the center was founded for and is supposed to be continuing to do.
Krauss says the outlook, however, is bleak. And the problem of moribund languages is global. Of the 6,000 languages worldwide, Krauss considers 90% of them severely endangered. But it's not all dire. He brings the conversation back full circle to the interesting connection he and Rabbi Greenberg raised at the beginning of the evening's discussion. Krauss said no one wrote a dictionary of Hebrew when it was still a native language, but Alaska Native languages do have meticulous documentation.
So eat your heart out, Hebrew, in the case of how well some Alaska Native languages are scientifically documented compared to Hebrew.
After his discussion, Dr. Krauss was presented with the latest version of an Inupiaq language learning guide by Gladys Pingawi of the Nana Corporation. More stories in our continuing series on Native education, links and pictures are at our website, aprn.org. A Juno film about a real-life tragedy is giving local high school students an important first-hand lesson in the dangers of drinking and driving. Last June, shortly after graduating from Juno Douglas High School, Taylor White went to a bonfire party out the road. At some point, he and some friends decided to go for a drive. Tyler Emerson was at the wheel of his 1999 Audi, traveling in excess of 80 miles per hour, when he lost control and crashed into some trees. Both Emerson and White were thrown from the vehicle. Emerson survived. White did not. The Taylor White Foundation, set up by White's parents, Kevin and Carol, has produced a short documentary about the accident, which was shown to students at Thunder Mountain High School this week. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Tyler Emerson's life changed forever June 5th, 2009. That was the date of the fateful crash that killed his friend, Taylor White.
Somehow fate had its way. I don't know. It's just, it's really tough. I don't know why he's the unlucky one. I don't know. I'd trade spots with him if I had the chance. I mean, I just feel really bad about this whole thing, just trying to do what I can, make it right.
Emerson has taken responsibility for the accident, pleading guilty to criminally negligent homicide. He's due to be sentenced to 1 to 3 years in prison on June 2nd, 1 year to the day that he and White walked in their Juno Douglas High School graduation. Before the accident, Emerson was planning on a summer road trip with some friends. Later that year, he was going to start classes at Humboldt State University in California. He'd just finished fixing up his car, which was now totaled, and one of his best friends was dead. If there's one thing Emerson wants other young people to take away from his experience, it's that your actions now can hurt you for the rest of your life.
You need to think before you act. Like, everything was taken away from me with this one decision that probably took 5 seconds in my head. Just in the twinkle of an eye, everything was gone.
Taylor White's parents, Carol and Kevin, remain close to Emerson despite the accident. Kevin White is a soft-spoken man who says the idea for a short film about his son's death came from some of Taylor's friends, including Emerson.
One of the things they wanted to do was to tell this story in hopes that they could help other kids make some choices that would keep them out of the same kind of trouble.
That's also why the Whites started the Taylor White Foundation. Although they just submitted their 501c3 nonprofit application in December, the foundation already has some ambitious goals. Limit teenagers' access to drugs and alcohol, use current research on teen brains to create education and awareness efforts targeted at teens, and develop exciting and healthy activities for young people. Thunder Mountain High School students who saw the short film Wednesday say it made them think about the risks taken by themselves and their friends. 18-year-old senior Ryan Roguska says he doesn't drink himself, but he has friends that do.
I personally have never drank because I don't really believe in it, but I'm not going to stop anyone else. But it kind of makes me more conscious of their actions too, that maybe they could hurt themselves. So if any of my friends ever like was going to do it, I want them to tell me so I could give them a ride or something like that.
The film is still a rough draft, according to White. He's working with local production company Lucid Reverie on the final version, which he hopes will be available through the Taylor White Foundation website, taylorwhite.org. White says it's better for teenagers to hear about the consequences of risky behavior from their peers rather than from adults.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a crusty old guy that knows nothing. I'm just like their parents.
In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. And by North Rim Bank, reminding you that you have a second chance to help other Alaskans. If you filed for your PFD online, you can safely donate a portion of your dividend to your favorite Alaska cause. Log into the PFD website and pick, click, give. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide coverage for Alaskans who are denied health insurance due to a high-risk medical condition. For example, a person who has diabetes and has been rejected by an insurance company will be accepted by ACHIA. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. Information is also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
The Bureau of Land Management is looking at the impacts of invasive plant eradication and control measures along the Dalton Highway. BLM wildlife biologist Ruth Gronquist says the plan includes a range of measures, starting with improved surveillance for non-indigenous plants, followed by basic mitigation techniques.
Do some mowing, add some hand pulling, and in some cases, the managers may decide that this is a big enough ecological problem that they're going to want to maybe apply the appropriate herbicide.
Granquist cautions that no action will be taken until a thorough analysis is completed. She says the agency has not used any herbicides in Alaska to control invasives so far, but that the problem is growing in many areas. Granquist says Alaska is still in a position where it can do something about the problem.
We have a predominance of native vegetation, where in some states it's hard to find a native ecosystem that doesn't have at least some invasive plants in it. So we're just, we are in a fortunate situation. We're kind of ahead of the curve, and we want to stay ahead, because once you have major infestations of plants, it's a much bigger battle, sometimes a losing battle.
Granquist says there are over 100 invasive plant species in Alaska. She says the ones spreading along the Dalton Road corridor are primarily the result of historic roadside stabilization and seeding projects, or from seeds that have been brought north on vehicles. In some cases, seeds are then carried down rivers and deposited on sandbars, where they begin to grow, impacting native ecosystems and wildlife. Just days after the Alaska legislature passed a bill rolling back part of a 2006 voter-approved head tax on cruise ship passengers, a new cruise line has announced it will test Alaskan waters for the first time in 2011. KBBI's Aaron Selbig has the details.
Miami-based Oceana Cruises, which on its website bills itself as an upper-premium cruise line for mature and discerning travelers, will send its 684-passenger ship Regatta on 10 voyages to Alaska in 2011. Passengers will have a choice between several destinations, including traditionally cruise-friendly ports like Juneau and Seward, but also more off-the-beaten-path towns like Hoonah, Kodiak, and Homer. Oceana's Senior Director of Communications, Tim Rebecki, says the number one reason for the decision to expand into Alaska was that's where their guests said they most wanted to go.
Number two was the fact that Governor Parnell and the state legislature have been working very, very hard to make Alaska a little bit more tourist and cruise ship friendly. So that also played a big part.
John Binkley, president of the Alaska Cruise Association, which had previously sued the state over the head tax, says it's encouraging that a smaller outfit like Oceana is expanding into Alaska for the first time.
They are a great operation. Their clientele are very well-to-do, spend a lot of money when they come off in port communities. They're smaller ships with long itineraries, so they'll make a lot of stops in different Alaska ports, and it'll be great for Alaska's economy.
Rebecki says his company was looking for smaller Alaskan ports to suit its smaller ships.
We looked at, okay, where are the big ships going, and more importantly, where are they not going? And so that was when we were looking at it, you know, places like Homer and Kodiak, and actually sailing into Anchorage proper rather than doing turnarounds in Seward. That played a very, very key role in developing our itineraries.
Homer and Kodiak will get a taste of their new cruise destination status next month when Holland America's new Alaskan Adventurer Tour brings the 1,380-passenger Amsterdam from Seattle May 17th. That tour is scheduled for 9 stops throughout the summer. Binkley says he sees a trend in cruise passengers wanting to see smaller ports like Homer.
I think towns such as Homer have such a tremendous amount of charm and really typify Alaska. I think it'll be a great addition to some of the smaller ships coming to smaller communities, and hopefully it's a trend, and Homer sees more of the smaller high-end ships coming to their community.
A 10-day Alaska cruise aboard the Regatta goes for $3,499 per guest based on double occupancy, with departures coming out of either San Francisco or Vancouver. Tickets go on sale April 28th. Rebecki says if things go well in 2011, Oceana plans to continue its service to Alaska into the foreseeable future.
When we find a destination that our guests really like, we remain committed to them. Guests vote with, or tourists vote with their wallets. And if everyone votes with their wallets, that they want, they love Alaska and they want more of it, and it's going to continue, absolutely.
In Homer, I'm Aaron Selbig.
The second day of the Senior Native Youth Olympics in Anchorage featured the Eskimo stick pull in the morning. There's also a version called the Indian stick pull, and Ilya Tulik from the Nelson Island community of Nightmute has competed in both. He's a junior this year and says he's tried all the events, but he qualified for the Indian stick pull, which in a way he's been practicing for a long time.
When I was a kid, I used to be able to just grab the little blackfishes with my hands.
He says the Indian stick pull is somewhat reminiscent of those little kid days.
Indian is like trying to grab a slippery big salmon, because our opponent will be pulling too, and it'll be a lot harder to pull. The stick will just be slipperier and it declines from 1 inch to half an inch.
The stick is heavily greased, adding to the trickiness factor. Stephanie Lupi is a senior from Bethel. She says she placed second in the one-arm reach every year since eighth grade. This is her final year to try for first, which she says is exciting, but a little sad, too. She's changed her strategy for her final attempt.
I don't want to know what the hype is at this year, because when I know what it's at, it kind of gets to my head, and I'm absolutely not asking anyone else what they can hit, how high they go. I'm not worrying about what they can do. I'm worrying about what I can do, my personal best.
The students applaud and encourage their fellow competitors and say they train by running, working out, and staying away from pop and candy. Raven Phillips is a ninth grader from Aniak. She was waiting for the next round of the toe kick competition, where she placed second. But she took time to casually list off the others she competes in.
The kneel jump, the one arm, seal hop, 1 foot, sometimes a 2 foot.
The toe kick is a complex jump where you must keep your feet together, tap a small round stick on your way over without falling or landing on it, kicking it backwards and landing on your feet. Raven, unlike a lot of competitors, jumps barefoot.
It's easier to bend my heel to flick the stick when I don't have shoes on.
The games continue through tomorrow at the Dena'ina Center in downtown Anchorage. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Casey Kelly in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Aaron Selbig in Homer. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by North Rim Bank, reminding you that you have a second chance to help other Alaskans. If you filed for your PFD online, you can safely donate a portion of your dividend to your favorite Alaska cause. Log into the PFD website and pick, click, give. Does your child not look at you when you talk to him? Are you worried your child doesn't play with other children? Or do you wonder why your child seems to be in her own world? Well, these could be the early signs of autism. For more information about autism and resources in your community, visit autism.alaska.gov or call 1-800-799-7570. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Fisheries students work directly with professionals in their field and enjoy hands-on learning through internships and research. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.